All right, morning. Got excited yesterday. We made it to today's daf. Today's daf is daf nun gimel. Yesterday's daf was daf nun beis, and I read the first word of daf nun beis yesterday. Now, granted, that's as far as we got. We didn't go beyond that point in time, but I read it and it got me excited. Okay, now we're returning back to our main subject of the Masechta. But before we do that, just one loose end I want to just cover from yesterday, and that's the following. The Mishnah said that anything that requires a bracha before is going to require a bracha afterwards, but no. Anything that requires a bracha afterwards requires a bracha before, but not the reverse. Meaning, so there are things that require a bracha before, but don't require a bracha afterwards. So what exactly is the Gemara talking about? So the Gemara suggests it's talking about vegetables, but as we know, we make a bracha achrona for vegetables. The Gemara suggested water, same story. The accepted opinion is that we make a bracha achrona even after we drink water as well. The Gemara suggested...
The question that everyone asked is if you drink water not for... you don't think shakur, you say bracha achrona?
Right, if you're not thirsty, you're just drinking it to take medicine. Yeah. So then, no, you wouldn't make a bracha achrona, you wouldn't make a bracha achrona. So then, And then the Gemara suggested, what about mitzvos? Meaning, by mitzvos we make a bracha before, but we don't make a bracha afterwards. To which the Gemara says, well, there are opinions out there that say that you make a bracha afterwards. In fact, in Ma'arava, in Eretz Yisrael, the minhag was that when they took off their tefillin, so they would make a bracha after taking off their tefillin. So then the Gemara concluded, and this is the first word on the top of Nun Beis Amud Aleph, yesterday's daf, Reichani, okay, we're talking about Birchas HaReach, the bracha when you smell something, after you smell something. So then you don't make a bracha achron after you smell something, even though it is a Birchas Hanah. Right, it's benefit. There's no bracha achrona. It's interesting. Why is there no bracha achrona? I know that's a funny question, but it's a fair question. Why is there no bracha achrona after you smell something? You eat something, you make a bracha achrona. It's a birchas hananin. You benefited from this world. So why isn't there no bracha achrona? So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi writes, "Mevarchin ala." It's the top Rashi of Nun Beis Amud Aleph. Rashi writes, "Mevarchin ala bari atzei besamim vein tam bracha lacharav." The hana'a mu'etasi. So Rashi says it's a quantifiable issue, meaning that when you eat something, so even after you eat it, so like you still feel the benefit, but after you smell something, the smell goes away, and there's like no lingering benefit. So it's I'm adding a little bit to Rashi. I'm not sure if this is all that Rashi's saying, but Rashi's saying hana'a mu'etas. It's a insignificant. It's a very small amount of hana'a. And therefore, it's not enough to warrant a bracha achrona. That's how Rashi explains it. Anyway, the one point I wanted to bring out from yesterday is the following, where the Gemara says is that you make a bracha, in Eretz Yisrael, they made a bracha achrona. That's not the right way to say it, but they made a bracha after they removed their tefillin. So if you take a look at Tosos on the bottom of Nun Aleph on the base, and Tosos writes, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the al tefillin levad avu mevarach lishmor chukav, this bracha that you make after doing a mitzvah is limited to tefillin. But it doesn't apply to other mitzvahs. Now, why? So Rabbeinu Tam says it's based on the following. Dekra, because when you look at the pasuk regarding tefillin, the pasuk that, right, the pesukim by tefillin that we're familiar with are the pesukim of Shema. Right, the end of the first paragraph of Shema, the end of the second paragraph of Shema, the Torah mentions tefillin. But there are two other places in the Torah where the Torah talks about the mitzvah of tefillin, and they are in Parshas Bo. And the pasuk says, "Veshamartas chuka hazos lamoadam." The Torah says, and by the end of Parshas Bo, and you're gonna safeguard this chok. So you see that the Torah, when referring to tefillin, is chok. Now it's not the only mitzvah in the Torah that's referred to as a chok, as we all know.
Right.
Okay, but that's the bracha is connected with tefillin. So Sfir Leilav Ne'marava de Betfillin Ksiv Kedam Rabbi Yerushalmi, and he quotes the Yerushalmi as well, which kind of makes sense because the Yerushalmi was authored in Eretz Yisrael, authored by the members of the Bnei Marava. So this bracha is specific to tefillin. Aval Tzitzis Ki Kemesalek Me'alav Leikam Ande Mevarech. But when you take off your tzitzis at night, see, do you make a bracha when you take off your tzitzis? Not even the Bnei Marava would make a bracha. And even the Bnei Eretz Yisrael, they would every time they take it off, they would make this bracha. No, only at the end of the day. Meaning, right? They wore it all day. As we know, the minhag kadmon, the early minhag was to wear the tefillin all day. So at the end of the day, where basically they had to take it off, because you're not allowed to wear tefillin at night. Nighttime is not the correct time for tefillin. So shechayev l'salkin kedamar ba'kometz rabba. We go back to our Gemara Menachos. He niach tefillin l'achrish kesachama over ba'asei. You can't wear tefillin at night, says the Gemara Menachos. Dechsi v'shamarta zechuka v'hishamer da'asei asei aval tzitzis. Now, when it comes to tzitzis, so you don't have to put tzitzis on at night. But if you wear tzitzis at night, that's not an issue. It's no problem whatsoever to wear tzitzis at night. The ein chayav salkan, meaning if let's say you're wearing your tzitzis during the day and it runs into the night, you don't have to take off your tzitzis. You can leave them on. So that is the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam says two things, really. Number one, that this bracha achrona of a mitzvah is limited to tefillin. Number two, is that it was only in a situation where they were wearing it the whole day, got to the end of the day, they have to take off their tefillin. So there's right, so it's part of the mitzvah is to take off your tefillin. And so therefore they made a bracha at the end, at the taking off the tefillin. So now, that's all Rabbeinu Tam, and that's all Rabbeinu Tam's opinion. And it is supported by the Gemara Yerushalmi. Now, if all that's correct and all that's true, so you kind of get lost in our Gemara. Because our Gemara is looking for, where's the area in Halacha where there's a Bracha Rishona, but there's no Bracha Achrona. So the Gemara suggested, well, maybe mitzvos. And the Gemara says, nah, there is a Bracha Achrona for mitzvos. At least according to the B'nai Ma'arava. According to Rabbeinu Tam, the Gemara didn't have to move on to a new discussion, a new topic. The Gemara could have stayed in Birchas HaMitzvah and just simply said, okay, what about tzitzis? Why didn't the Gemara do that? So that's it. Tosus is going to try to address that question. Now the Gemara says, our Gemara could have taken that avenue, where our Gemara could have moved to the topic of tzitzis. But by moving to the topic of Birchas HaReach, it's a topic where there's no qualification. It's an unqualified statement. Every time you smell something, there's only a bracha rishona, and there is no bracha achrona. You're right, in tzitzis we can make a distinction. Sorry. In mitzvot we can make a distinction. But the Gemara decided, let's move to a new topic, being that it's really an unqualified statement. Okay. And see on in Tosos, interesting position of Rabbeinu Tam. Okay. No other mitzvahs, meaning, and even according to Rabbi Natan, no other mitzvahs have a bracha achrona. There's no mitzvah where I make a bracha after doing the mitzvah. The bracha is always before doing the mitzvah. In fact, that's part of the requirement, is to make the bracha before you do the mitzvah, and then that's it. And then you finish the mitzvah and it's done. So the idea of making a bracha at the end of a mitzvah, after doing the mitzvah, it's a strange thing. But B'nai Ma'arava did it. Yeah, so, right, and there are things, there are times, bracha reading for the Torah, yeah.
You're learning and then you're...
Right, correct. You, when your learning's over and then you make a... Right, it's a good example. That's a good point. That is part of the issue over there is that our hands are dirty, you know, theoretically. Mm-hmm. So we can't make a bracha beforehand because our hands are dirty. So now we have to wait till our hands are clean. So, okay, it's a you know. Mm-hmm. It follows the model of Geirus, meaning by when a ger tovels in the mikvah, he has to make a bracha afterwards because he can't make a bracha before. He's not a Jew.
Catch
22. Right, right. Okay, now... I think that's what Rashi's pointing to. Okay, we are now moving along. Okay, now I made this point already a number of times, but it can't be understated. We're back to Masech Danida. We're back to the topic of discussing a woman and the maturation and the development of a woman. The fifth and sixth prakim of Masech Danida talks about the development of a woman. Now, a woman develops in three stages. In fact, not that long ago, about a week ago, compare the development of a woman to a fig. Okay. And so, and I don't know who that helps. Doesn't help me, but...
doesn't help you marry.
But there are three stages of development of a woman, meaning she's a katan up until 12. At 12 years of age, with the development of sa'aros, shtei sa'aros, she becomes now a nara. That is a six-month period. After 6 months, at 12 and a half years of age, she moves to the category of being a bogeris. Okay. But I made this point before, but I want to reiterate and state, and I cannot understate it. when she turns 12 years of age, right, and she has a bas mitzvah, and she's an adult, meaning at this point of being a nara, yes, it's true that dad has certain jurisdiction over her. In terms of nedarim, dad can annul her vows. In terms of marrying her off, dad could still marry her off while being a nara. In terms of income that she earns, it's going to go to her father. In terms of any revenue that comes, it's going to go to her father. Okay, so in other words, yes, dad has jurisdiction over her. But at 12 years of age, not 12 and a half, at 12 years of age, and with the physical development of the shtei sa'aros, she is an adult. Plain and simple. And that becomes now very important for the following discussion. The Mishnah begins around the top of Nun Beis Amud Aleph. Tinoka sheviyu shtei sa'aros, you have a girl who has shtei sa'aros o chaletzos ha'misya bemis. Now, so now as an adult, she's eligible to do big-time mitzvahs. Big-time mitzvahs for her are going to be mitzvahs like chalitza or yibum. It's interesting that the Mishnah puts chalitza before yibum. Okay, but let's not, that now's not the time to make that, to make something of it. V'chayavas b'chol mitzvahs amors b'Torah. And the Mishnah says she's an adult now, obligated in all the mitzvahs of the Torah. V'chein tinok shehevi shtei sa'aros. And the same thing is true with a boy. Chay b'chol mitzvahs amors b'Torah. Once he arrives at physical development, and let's also add, turns 13 years of age, so now he's obligated in all the mitzvahs of the Torah. He's a man. Chay b'chol mitzvahs amors b'Torah. V'ralos ben sor amora. He's now eligible to become a ben sor amora. V'shiyavi shtei sa'aros. Achi Yakif Zikan Atachton. I'm sorry, Achi Yakif Zikan. And at what point in time can he be tried as a Ben Sar Omara from 13 years of age and the development of two Saaros until Achi Yakif, until there is a fuller development of the area of that region of Sa'aros. Zikan hatachtum v'lo ha'elyon. Now when we say Zikan over here, that's a reference to the beard. You might have thought that we're talking about his facial hair. So the Mishnah says, no, we're not. We're talking about the genital area. Hatachtum v'lo ha'elyon. Now l'shadibur chachamim v'lashon nekiya. But the chachamim spoke v'lashon nekiya, so that's why it says Zikan. It says the beard, even though it's not really referencing the beard. Tinokur she'evishtei Sa'aros en yichol ha'main. Okay? And furthermore, back to the girl. The girl who is now 12 years old and has shtei sa'aros, she no longer can do miyun. Okay, let's say it over just again because it's important just to understand and appreciate. If a girl has a father, the father can marry her off, and that is a Torah right of the father. Because dad can marry her off at the age of 7, at the age of 8. I know in our society, not acceptable. But back in the good old days, 7, 8, 9 years of age, dad can marry her off. The marriage works ben haTorah, even though she doesn't have da'as, the marriage is being affected through the da'as of the father, and so she now is a full-fledged wife to this man. If, however, dad is not around, dad died, and she's now an orphan, so the rabbis afforded the right to either her mother or her brother to marry her off. But this marriage does not operate on a da'araisa level. The marriage only operates on a da'rabana level. She can annul this marriage. Up until what point precisely? So this is subject to a debate. Our Mishnah first brings in the opinion of the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama says that once she arrives at 12 years of age, and she has shtei sa'aros, so now as an adult, eina yechola lama'in, she can't do miyun. From this point forward, let's call it the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Okay, I happen to know, I have inside information, that that's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Huda Omer, Ashiyar Behashachor, and Rabbi Huda says no. Even at 12 years of age, she could still has an opportunity to do miyun, Ashiyar Behashachor, until there is a preponderance of Shachor, black. Black over here means more sa'aros, more hair. Not exactly clear how to qualify that, but in other words, even after she turns 12, she has a little more time in order for her to be able to do miyun. Okay. Let's go. Let's go right to the Gemara. The Kaven did not. So the Gemara deals with a couple of just specific issues regarding the language of the Mishnah. Kaven did not chayev b'chol mitzvah samurz b'tarah ochlatz so yes misyabes lamali. So the first question the Gemara asks is very straightforward. Look, you're trying to make a point that at 12 years of age and she has shtei sa'aros, she's an adult. And the Mishnah went on to say that she's chayiv in all the mitzvahs in the Torah. So then why single out chalitza and yibum? What was the point of the Mishnah doing that? So Allah fukim with Rav Yosi, Amra ish katzav beparsha val isha ben gedola ben ketana. Kamash malan di'ayis ishtei sarasini lo lo. So the Gemara says because when the Torah talks about being an adult, by the mitzvah of chalitza, the Torah speaks specifically about the man being an adult. What about the woman? So Rav Yosi happens to be of the opinion that when it comes to a woman, she doesn't have to be a woman. A minor girl can perform chalitza, according to Rav Yosi. So our Mishnah wants us to know that that's not the accepted halacha. We don't follow like Rav Yosi in this regard. My tami isha kish v'kev and detan v'chenatin. V'kev and detan v'chenatin k'shevi beis haaretz chay b'chol mitzvos amos b'tara. My tami isha kish. Sorry. Period. Okay. And the rabbis disagree with Rabbi Yossi, because just like the man has to be an adult, the woman also has to be an adult. Fine. Next point. V'kevin detana v'chein atinak she'evi beis haaretz chayv v'chol mitzvot samurz b'torah lamali. V'chitema mishum dekvil amistiv v'arlios mitzvot amara. So the Gemara says, now why are we talking about the boy, 13 years of age now, and has shtei saras, he becomes a man. Why is our Mishnah, Masechet Nida, needing to inform us that information? And maybe it's because of the whole Bensor Amara issue. So the Gemara says, we already learned that. Go to the 8th parak of Sanhedrin, and you're going to see our Mishnah there, verbatim, word for word, same point being made. So why does our Mishnah here, Masech Tanina, need to bring it up? Tanina chad is demnam, Ema sehu Bensor Amara, Mishiev ishtei saar v'ashi, kezikana tachtav alo al yon, el shetibur chachamim, balasha nekiya. Good. So all this information is already contained in the Masechta Sanhedrin. Why is it here? In Hachi Nami. So the Gemara says, point well taken. Ala'ayi did the parash mila did tinokas, come in farash nami, mila did tinok. So the Gemara's answer is, which is an answer we're familiar with, symmetry. The reason why our Mishnah talks about boys is because it talked about girl, and for the purpose of symmetry, our Mishnah mentions it here as well, even though in Hachi Nami, you're right, it is repeated information. Tinoka Shehevio. Okay, now. So now we spend a good amount of time talking about this mitzvah of Mion. It's a fascinating discussion. So again, we have a concept of annulment in our religion. You may not have thought of it, but there is, and it's obviously not in practice nowadays, because nowadays the mother and the brother are not marrying off the minor girl. But if mom or the brother married off the minor girl, she has an opportunity to annul the marriage. And I mean it literally. She annuls the marriage. By an annulment, she basically will, she'll expunge.
She speaks it.
She expunges the entire marriage. Meaning, and we're going to illustrate this in the strongest way imaginable. Not only if she had relations with her husband, even if she had relations and she had a child, there's an opportunity for this girl, I know she's very young, but there's an opportunity for this girl to annul the marriage. Now, the annulment has an expiration, which is very clear. Now, what exactly is that expiration? So that's subject to a debate. So to review, we learned in our mission that according to Rav Meir, the moment she turns 12 and she has shtei saaros, that's it. We have arrived at the statute of limitation. She no longer can annul the marriage. Done. According to Rabbi Yehuda, she has a little bit longer. Now, how much longer does she have? So the Mishnah says, at a later physical development, when she has more hairs in that area. Okay? I know that's not a very qualifying statement. It's hard to quantify what exactly that means. But in other words, she's got a little bit more time. Okay? And we're going to see actually later on this morning, there's a third opinion as well, which is going to be even more fascinating. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Halachik Rabbi Yehuda. Now, first we'll start off with the Amoraim. So the Amoraim take a very strong position. The Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. So in other words, not at the age of 12 exactly, but later. Now, Umode Rabbi Yehuda, She'im Niv'ala L'Acher She'hevi Shtei Sa'aros Shuvein Yechol Amayin. But even within the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, we're going to qualify. Rav Yehuda says that her Mion opportunity extends even beyond 12. But, and watch carefully, and listen carefully, if after 12 years of age, meaning the moment that the day after she turns 12, or the day that she turns 12, and she has shtei saros, and she has relations with her husband, right? The same guy that she's been having relations, however long they've been married. even Rav Yehuda will say at that point in time that the marriage transforms from being a Darabana marriage to a Daraisa marriage. And it makes perfect sense. Meaning because at now at 12 years of age and a day, and the Shtei Sarah, she's now an adult. And now she's having relations with her husband. So what are one of the ways to affect a marriage? So one of the ways to affect a marriage is through Bia. And now, as an adult, she now formally has Das, right? She has a mind now. And so by her having relations with her husband, so now that act of relations as an adult transforms the marriage from a marriage midarabanan to a marriage midaraisa. You can't annul a marriage midaraisa. The only thing you can do is annul a marriage midarabanan. So even Rav Yehuda, who gives more time after she turns into adult, but qualified that statement that if she has relations immediately upon becoming an adult, the marriage is no longer annullable, if that's a word.
This is Rav Yehuda with the Shinana?
No. This is the Tana Rav Yehuda. The Tana Rav Yehuda.
There's a machloket of Rav and Shmuel regarding this, whereas Shmuel said, even afterwards, she has to expressly say that she's doing it.
Right. Okay, so that right. So that's a good... Right, that is a good point, meaning does she have to, in other words, going into this act of relations now, which is going to be a transforming act, does she need to say, does he need to say, this is for the purposes of marriage, and to make the discussion even a little more interesting, and I don't mean aid them, meaning to actually see the act, but in other words, aid them in the sense that, they see them go into a private room together. Right. In other words, do you need all that in order to make this a transformative act of Bia? Fair questions. I'm not sure. Well, let's go on to the Gemara. So Chavruhei deRav Kahana. Now, by the way, I'm sorry. Before I go on to the Gemara, I just want to go back for a moment to Rav Meir. Okay, just for a minute. Let's see if we can even understand Rabbi Meir, because Rav Meir is interesting. I mean, what's the opinion of Rav Meir? The moment she turns 12 years of age, the marriage automatically flips into a marriage min haTorah. Right? That's what I say Rav Meir, I mean the Tanakam of our Mishnah. That's the opinion of Rav Meir. What's the mechanism? What triggers? Meaning, according to Rav Meir now, good, she's an adult. And so what? Meaning, that because she becomes an adult, that automatically transforms the marriage from a marriage min haRabbanan to a marriage min haDaraisa? Meaning, when all said and done, you really do under. I hear Rabbi Yehuda very well. Rav Meir, I question not his position. His position is his position, but what's behind that position? How does it become that they now are, the marriage now changes all because she just turned into an adult, right? I'm not sure if I have a good explanation, but something worth it needs to think about it.
Has there not been an issue of her being married before and during a bia, then that would be a valid marriage anyway, regardless of whether she was married before.
Right, but in this particular case, she's married to this guy, but the marriage is only a marriage midrabanan. Okay, so now let's go on to the Gemara. Amr lehu Rav Kahana lo kach. No, did I just skip a little bit? Yes, I did. Right in the middle of Ninbeza Amid Aleph, Chaver Derav Kahana Sevel Amavid Uvdik Rav Yehuda. So there was an incident. So Bizman Amoraim, this actually occurred. This was to a certain degree common. So the assembly around Rav Kahana wanted to practice like Rav Yehuda, meaning so giving her a mean opportunity even after she turns 12. The Alpha Gav de Nivola, but in this particular scenario, she had Bia right after she turned 12 with her husband. So Amlu Rav Kahana, lo kachaya maisa bevito shar Rabbi Yishmael. So Rav Kahana says, what are you doing? No. And he says, and let me tell you the following story, the story of the daughter of Rabbi Yishmael. Now, Rabbi Yishmael, by the way, was one of the Asara Haruge Malchus, one of the 10 martyrs. So could be that this is how his daughter arrived at such a fate, but that's a lot of speculation on my part. Shebal leBeis HaMedrash, lemain. So the daughter of Rabbi Yishmael went to the Beis HaMedrash because she wanted to do miyun, and listen to this, ubanam workav lak tefa. And not only she come to the Beis HaMedrash, but with a child. So in other words, this marriage that was, her father wasn't alive. The marriage was arranged by her mother or by her brother. The marriage was only midrabanan. But clearly now, she's of a certain age. I don't mean she's, you know, in her 50s or 60s. I mean, however, she was old enough where she had relations, got pregnant, and had a child. And the child is riding on her shoulders. So in other words, I don't know what age she's at right now, but she's older. She's at least 12. Right? Now, Rabbi Yishmael taught this halacha. But when he taught the halacha, he was teaching it like, you know, in the Beis Medrash, right? In the laboratory, in the, you know, academia. And uvachta b'chia gadol be'Beis Medrash, and they started crying in the Beis Medrash. And the irony that years ago, Rabbi Yishmael was here in this Beis Medrash teaching this halacha, like from an academic standpoint, and now his daughter is coming into the Beis Medrash with a child wanting to do mian. It was such a sad event. Everyone started crying. Amru davish amru osar tzaddik yichashal bozaro, and they said, I don't understand, meaning this tzaddik Rabbi Shmuel said it, and his daughter, his very own daughter, is going to stumble on this halacha. Now, da'am Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, so first of all, let's learn what Rabbi Shmuel taught in the Beis Medrash. And he taught the following. V'hi lo nispasa asura, ha nispasa muteras. Now, here's what we know. When a woman who's married is taken against her will, she's raped, so we know the halacha is that she's not a mezana. She's not an adulterer. But obviously, she's an ones. Okay? And so, obviously, she can go back to her husband. However, if she is lo nispasa, in other words, she wasn't raped, but she was a willful participant in an act of adultery, so she now becomes prohibited to her husband. That's the pasuk in Parshas Naso. That's by the Sota. Now, Rabbi Shmuel teaches the following. V'yesh lecha acheres, she'af api shelo nispasa, muteres. However, there is a scenario, oddly enough, where a woman does willingly have relations with another man, and she'll still be permitted to the man that she quote unquote had an affair with, right? Quote unquote, she had an affair with. Now, first of all, why is Rabbi Shmuel? What's he doing over here? What's pushing him into that position? It's if you go back to the pasuk, it says v'hi lo nispasa. This one was not, which gives the implication that there's another scenario similar to what the Torah is describing, where a woman is willingly having relations with another man and she's not forbidden. And what would be that scenario? V'ezezu shekedusha kedushetal she'af al pi shebena murkava k'tefa mime'enes v'holeches la. Where Rabbi Yishmael says that you can have a scenario of Kedushe Taos. Now, Kedushe Taos literally means that it was a mistaken Kedusha. Right? The Kedusha was done under a mistake. In this context, what it means is that either her mother or her brother married her off. And then she decides, you know what? I'd like to annul the marriage. And she goes ahead and she can annul the marriage. It's a loose translation of the term, but that's what's called kedushe taos. So in other words, under those circumstances, she can now be with another man, and the truth of the matter is that even if she's with another man, I know this is going to sound odd, even if she's with another man before the annulment, what the annulment will accomplish is it will totally expunge her marriage with her first husband, and so that this marriage over here can stay. Okay. Again, that's the whole idea behind annulment. Now, the interesting part over here is that Rabbi Shmuel says that how long? Is there a statute of limitation for annulment? Rabbi Shmuel says no. Rabbi Shmuel's of the opinion, and we haven't seen this yet. We saw Rabbi Meir, we saw Rabbi Huda. This is a third opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that she can annul even later on in her life. Even with a child on her shoulder, she can go ahead and annul. So you hear what Rabbi Shmuel was teaching? Right? Even when the girl comes in with the child on her shoulder, she can still annul. It happens to be now, what he was doing is he was foreshadowing what's going to happen to his own daughter. His own daughter actually came into the Beis Medrash with a child on her shoulder, seeking an annulment, exactly as her father years ago taught in the Beis Medrash.
Okay. But there was no taut there, was there?
The taut is, again, that's why the word taut is over here, we're translating loosely, the taut is that she doesn't want it.
Uh-huh. And she does can. Does that work for any other mistake? Like if
no, no. Her, this is a very. There are scenarios where the marriage can be annulled based on misinformation that was given.
Right.
She's an islandist, for example, and she didn't tell him that she was an islandist.
Oh yeah, right.
Okay, good. So then we could do the same thing also as well.
But there she doesn't have a kid.
Here, fair point. Here we're using in the context of Mian. But now,
the status of the child
is a child born out of wedlock. Okay, well, certainly not a mamzer, right? In America, so they throw around terms of bastard, but that's an American term. In other words, in halacha, it's just simply a child born out of wedlock. That, not a mamzer.
In this case, you have to get a kid.
So, according to Rabbi Shmuel, once you annul, that's it, you expunge. It's an expungement of the marriage. It wasn't a marriage.
How is that on the way?
She says it. There is documentation. It happens to be, the Gemara in Yevamos talks about the fact that there's documents that are written, but the documents are just simply, court papers that said that this happened. But what actually affects it is her statement. Now, all this is good and well, but they took a vote in the Beis Medrash, and they put down the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. They overruled the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. And in the Beis Medrash, what they said is, no, plain and simple, no. That the statute of limitation of Miyun runs out at the age of 12. Once she turns 12 years and a day, and she has Shtei Sa'aros, she no longer can do Miyun. Okay, period. I'm sorry, not period, partial law of it uvda. So once Rav Kahana explained that to all the people, all of his colleagues, so then they said, okay, no more Miyun opportunity. Okay. To quickly summarize now, we have three opinions in terms of when the statute of limitations of Miyun expires. We have the opinion of Rav Meir at 12 years of age. We have the opinion of Rav Yehuda a little bit beyond that, right? Ad Shiyar BeHashachor, a further developmental stage later. And then there's the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, which seemingly there is no statute of limitation. She could do Miyun whenever she wants, even after she had a child. Okay? Certainly the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel is overruled. That goes without saying. And we're left down basically now to two opinions, Rabbi Meir versus Rabbi Yehuda. And the other thing to summarize as well is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we could qualify his statement. If after 12 years of age and a day, and she has Shtei Saros, and she has relations with her husband, that's it. Done. She's now locked into this marriage. The marriage is now a marriage menatara, and she no longer can do Miyun. He darshan the pasuk, and obviously the all those who overrule don't agree with his method of drasha. Yeah. How do they darshan the pasuk? I don't know. It's a fair question.
Use the pasuk for something else.
Yeah, right. Rabbi Yitzchak v'tamida de Rabbi Chanina avod of the Rabbi Yehuda ve'afagav de nivala. Now more Amorayim who were unclear about all this, even though I'm trying to be as clear as possible, but more Amorayim who were unclear about this. The Rabbi Yitzchak and the students of Rabbi Chanina wanted to actually rule in favor of Rabbi Yehuda, even though she already had relations with her husband as an adult. So, Azarav Shemin Bar Abba Amr Kamen Rav Yochanan, Azarav Yochanan Amr Kamen Rav Yehuda Nesia. So, it went up the courts from Rabbi Yochanan to Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia was a grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Sharda Bilsha V'Afkua. So, it's going to sound strong, but they sent in troops and they removed her. Removed her, meaning the girl who did Miyun, from her second husband, from her new husband. Because what they said is, no, you no longer had an opportunity to do Miyun. Since you had relations with your husband after you became an adult, so now, it's it, you're married to your first husband. And so what they did is they removed her from her second husband, and presumably,
Rashi can't marry the second husband again.
I'm doing a little bit of guesswork over here. And it's not just guesswork. Rashi seems to be saying this also straight out. They brought her back to her first husband. Now, right, good. So you're reading my mind. So now, if we're going to call this adultery with the second man, if we're going to call it adultery, so we all know the halacha. Well, not only is she prohibited to this man that she committed adultery with, but she's also prohibited to her husband. Mm-hmm. So I guess what you'll say is that we're not going to call it adultery. And it's kind of understandable because she only went to the second man because the rabbis allowed her to do so. Right. So this is not classic adultery. Not, in other words, certainly not adultery with intent.
By the way, as far as Nian goes, let's say that Rabbi Ishmael's daughter, they let her have Nian.
Yeah.
The whole difference is only, practically speaking, that she has to get him the right to get or not.
There's no get.
No, I'm saying if they say no Mian, then she has to get him the right to get. But really, she's going to keep the kid, probably.
Right. You're right, but first of all, the difference is whether she's a divorcee or whether she's not a divorcee.
So
with me, and she's not a divorcee.
Right. I mean, but that
she can now marry. I know this is strange, but she can marry a Kohen.
Right. She can marry a Kohen.
Yeah. Sure.
That's the difference.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
It's ironic because she's not a betula.
Right. Right. But for a Kohen though, that's not a criteria. That's a criteria for a Kohen Gadol, but not for a Kohen.
She still can't marry the Kohen.
I'm Rav Chista. I'm Marok. Follow. Shirba Ashchor. Ma'amish Allah Kadesh. Yushteish Ta'aros. Shvachos Veniros Kami. Shirba Ashchor Al Halavan. So now, what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to try to clarify for us what exactly is this later developmental stage of Rabbi Huda, where Rabbi Huda does extend her ability to do Mion to at a later point in time when there is further physical development. So the Gemara over here graphically will try to explain what exactly is this later further physical development that we're seeking in terms of when her mion ability extends to. So the Gemara says, look, the words of the Mishnah is Achiyarba Hashachor, which seems to me that if we can basically identify what the area is, what the genital region is, until that region is filled more with black. That's the simple reading of Rav Yehuda. And so what the Gemara first does is it quotes Rav Chista in the name of Mar Okfa and says, no, that's not what it means. It means Ad Shiyushtes Aros Shochvos V'Niros K'mishiyar B'Ashchor Lavan. It means that we're still with these two hairs, but these two hairs grow to a particular length where basically covers the area. Right? Obviously, in other words, there's going to be more white than black. Let's just leave it like that. But in other words, but it looks as though it covers a wide area. Rav Amar Shtei Saros Hamakifos Misafa LaSafa. It goes from one end to the other end. I'm not 100% sure what that means, but again, it's just it's not the simple reading of Rabbi Yehuda that we see in our Mishnah, where you need that entire area to be filled, or even the majority of the area to be filled. It just simply means that these Shtei Saros have now grown to a longer length. Also, a qualification regarding hair. Hair needs a gumo, meaning you need a hair follicle, right? Every hair has a root that goes in, and you need basically a gumo, right? A hole, right? I'm not saying it well, right? Basically, a base on the skin where the hair is growing out of. Rav Makia Amar Rav Adabar Ava Gumo Safa Pishain Saros. Now the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Makia, right? You listen carefully to the way I say it, Rav Makia, that it's Gumo Safa Pishain Saros. Even if you have a hair root, right, a base, even without the hair, that qualifies. I'm Rav Chenimbre Dravika, and the Gemara now goes through its correction. We've seen this already a number of times throughout Shas. Shpod, shvachos, gumos, on the halachas of the shpod, the spit, and shvachos, and gumos. These are three areas in halacha. Take a look at Rashi. I'm not going to go through it right now, right, in the consideration of time. But in these three areas of halacha, but the third one, however, that's what we're talking about. That even if you don't have an actual hair growing, but you have a root and a hair follicle and a base where the hair is to grow out of, that qualifies as a hair. So that's Rav Malkiyo. In other words, the correct attribution, and the Gemara was very precise in terms of making sure we know who said the halacha. That's Rav Malkiel with a vav at the end. And Bloris and Afer, Mikla and Gvina, and as far as the halachas of Bloris, certain hairstyle, Afer, Mikla, ashes that come from the oven, and Gvina and cheese. So again, take a look at Rashi. Rashi goes over these halachas. That's Rav Malkiel. Correct attribution is Rav Malkiel with an alf at the end. Rav Papa disagrees. Amra Masnitsa Masnitsa and Rav Malkiel. Shmaitata Rav Malkiel. No. That if it's a Mishnah or if it's a Braisa, that's Rav Malkiel with an aleph. If it's a statement made by an Amara, what's called Shmaitata, that's Rav Malkiel. Visimana, and by the way, as a mnemonic to help you remember that, Masnisa Malkasa. Great mnemonic. Great memory aid. Masnisa, that which is said over in a Braisa, Malkasa, that's the king or the queen. In other words, that has priority. And you hear both end with an aleph. Masnisa Malkasa. So the name Malkiyah with ends with an aleph, that is Mishnah or Braisa. Now the Shvachos, right, the way it was originally transposed to us, Shvachos was Rav Malkiyah. According to the second version of Rav Papa, no, it doesn't belong with Rav Malkiyah, it's Rav Malkiyah. Shvachos is a Mishnah in Ksuvos. Right, the Mishnah in Ksuvos talks about when you marry a woman and she brings in maidservants together with her, right? Is she exempt from doing any work for you? Right. So and what was it? Remember the conclusion over there is that even if she comes in with 100 maidservants, this takes us back a long time. Even if she comes in with 100 maidservants, she should still do some work around the house. Right, because the last thing you want is your wife not doing any work whatsoever. Okay, the Gemara says it. Okay, Amar Rav Ashi Amali Mar Zutra Kasha by Rabbi Chanina Misur Allah Loli Shtam Etan Rav Ashi Min Gumos. So the Gemara says, okay. So now, basically, what you're telling me is the following: that Guma, that all you don't actually need a hair. All you need is to see a base where a hair can grow out of, and that now qualifies as a hair. So. Why, when every single time we qualify what an adult is, we talk about the shtei sa'aros? If all you need is guma, so isn't guma enough? So iash minan guma tzavim minashu shtei sa'aros b'shtei gumos. I might have thought that I need two hairs growing out of two gumos. Kamash malan dafil shtei sa'aros b'guma achas. So the Gemara says all you need is two hairs coming out of one guma. That's why our Mishnayos always point to the hairs, because even if you have two hairs coming out of one guma, that is considered shtei saros. So the Gemara says, is that really possible? Can you have two hairs growing out of one base area? V'aksiv. Now the Gemara takes us to a piece of Agadata. Asher basari yishefeni v'hirba pitz ichinam. I'm sure I butchered that pasuk in Eov, but Eov now, as we know, the basic theme of Eov is, Eov went through a miserable life, he had a good life, and then the Satan comes to Kadosh Baruch Hu and says, let's see if Eov will still love you, even if you unleash Yisurin upon him. And so the entire Sefer Eov is about this man going through a lot of sorrows in life. And Eov, at one point, complains to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he says, Asher b'sa'ara, I'm getting all this for free, meaning I didn't deserve this. Now the Amarava
for nothing.
He was mecharef. Right, Eov did a little bit of blasphemy. Maybe he says to God, an amazing statement. Maybe God, what you did is you got my name wrong. Meaning my name is Eov, Aleph Yud, Vav Beis. And perhaps by the time my name arrived to you, maybe the Yud and the Vav got confused, got mixed up, and maybe you read my name as Oyev, right? Enemy. And maybe that's why you're doing all this to me, because I really don't understand it, because I don't deserve any of this. So maybe that's what happened. So, and obviously he's questioning the omniscience of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, so now we understand the answer that God gives, says to him. So Vayan Hashem es Iov min ha-sa'ara. And by the way, part of his explanation is, you know, maybe there was a lot of storm. Meaning, we're obviously not talking about a storm like we understand it, but in other words, by the time my name got to you, I had to go through some sort of spiritual storm, whatever that means, and the letters got confused. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response is, no storm, I don't know what you're talking about. So, Avayomer Elav, Shota Sheba'olam. And he refers to Eov as a fool. And he says, look, Harbe Neiman Barasi Barosha Shal Adam. Look, we have a lot of hair on our head. Ulechol Neima V'Neima Barati Liguma. And every hair has its own follicle and has its own base. Lechol Neima V'Neima Barati Liguma Mifnei Atzma. Shalo Yishnaim Yonkos Miguma Acha. So that two hairs will not be able to be yonek, won't get its sustenance from the same follicle. So, and it can't, in other words, it can't exist, and you can't have two hairs nurturing from one singular follicle. So, guma beguma lo nischalaf li, Iov beoyev nischalaf li. So, if I can keep hair straight, you don't think I can keep your name straight? Meaning, he says to Iov, you really think I don't know what your name is? Come on. So anyway, now that's the end of the piece of Agadata, but what we got from this Agadata is that each hair has its own follicle. And there is no such thing as two hairs growing out of one follicle. Which then the Gemara, now I know we're asking a question of halacha based on a piece of Agadata, but the basic point is that if, you know, even in Agadata, you know, there are still points that are being made, and the point that was made over here is, it's one hair per follicle, and meanwhile, we said above, that if you have two hairs growing out of one follicle, that's okay. Meaning that counts as two hairs. Lokasha habagufa habereisha. And the Gemara gives an interesting answer. Well, the hair on the head versus hair on the rest of the body. Hair on the head, it's one hair per follicle. Hair on the rest of the body, you can have two hairs growing out of one follicle. One base, one root. Okay, can I support that scientifically nowadays? No, but who cares? That's... From the Gemara's perspective, that's the distinction. Now, the two hairs, the Gemara now is going to speak in extraordinarily graphic terms in terms of how we count two hairs. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Shmuel, as long as it is in the region, meaning they do not have to be proximate to one another, as long as they're in the general region of the genital area, you can have one on the top and one below, and that's fine. Meaning that counts as two hairs. One on the gav. One on the gav over here means back. The Gemara here doesn't literally mean back. It just simply means the back area of the genital area. In other words, they don't have to be proximate to one another. The Gemara quotes in the name of Rabbi Shimon that you can have one hair on the knuckle and one hair on the toe. Now, he means that literally, he means it figuratively. I myself am unsure. But V'Rabbanan Amar, V'Rabbanan Amar Chistachu Beisaros B'Makam Echad. No, it has to be in one area, meaning one general area and one genital area. Tana Rabbanan Admasai Habas Memanet Sachitavi Shtei Saros Divrabi Meir. Here we go. Here's the inside information I knew from earlier, that the when can a girl do miyun? So up until 12 years of age and a day, that's the opinion of Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda Omer Ashiyah Be'Ashchor. Rav Yehuda says until you have a further development of the Shtei Sa'aros. Rav Yossi Omer Ashitakif Ha'atara. And then you have another opinion in this price of the opinion of Rav Yossi. We have not seen his opinion yet. Ashitakif Ha'atara until the entire Atara. Now, Atara over here, again, I'm not 100% sure how to translate that. Usually in the world of the genital area, the Atara translates as a corona. But there's no hair over there, so I'm not 100% sure what we mean by that. Ben Shalakos Omer Achetis Kalkel. Achetis Kalkel. So Rashi's unsure in terms of what exactly that means. Take a look at Rashi. who makes a suggestion. Anyway, we're going to go back to the Gemara. V'amar Rav Yishma Matzani Chani ben Chachinai b'tzidon v'amar k'shata megiel to Rabbi Akiva amar lo. An masai habas b'ma'enes. Go to Rabbi Akiva and ask him. Because obviously this was an issue that was up for heated debate. When can a girl do miyun? Imam l'chad shadav yishtei saros amar lo v'ahalo ben shlakos heid b'ma'amad kulchem b'yavna shetis kalkel. Now we do have a statement made by this, I guess it's a Tana. In other words, but his stage is Achatil Kalkevala Martam Lo Davar. Kishabati asked Rabbi Akiva, Amrali Kilkulze Ein Yodeh Mahu. Rabbi Akiva doesn't know what this is. Ben Shlakos Ein Makir, and he says, and oh, by the way, this Ben Shlakos, I don't even know who this person is. I'm Rasai Abbas Men Ma'enes Achitavi Beis Aros. But Rabbi Akiva does have a very clear conclusion until Beis Aros, until they have two hairs. So, the Gemara seems to side with the position of Rav Meir, and, by the way, no coincidence, Rav Meir is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, that the threshold, the statute of limitations of when a girl can do miyun, if she's in a miyun opportunity, which means that she was married off either by her mother or by her brother, is that once she arrives at the age of 12 years old, and she has shtei sa'aros, done. It's over. She can no longer do miyun. Okay, let's do one more bit of Mishnah, one more bit of Gemara, and we will finish for today. How long is a hair? Meaning, you know, this is legalese. We want to know now, what exactly is the length of a hair that qualifies it as a hair? So, and by the way, hair is not just limited to the halacha of identifying when a boy becomes a man and a girl becomes a woman, but hair also is necessary for the mitzvah paraduma. Now, by paraduma, you can't have two black hairs. Okay, so what if you have a black hair but doesn't meet its length? It's not a hair. Negaim, saras. You need a hair to grow in certain situations. You need a hair to grow out of the saras area, the afflicted area. Hair's got to be white. Again, what's a hair? What's the length of a hair that qualifies it as a hair? So, kedei lachav rosh on leikaren. So, the first opinion mentioned in this Mishnah is where you're able to turn it over, it's long enough where you're able to turn it over so it could touch its root. Rabbi Elazar amar kedei lekrotz b'tziporin, so that you could scratch it with a fingernail. Rabbi Akiva amar kedei shehu nitalos bezug. It could be plucked with tweezers. Amar Rav Chista amar mar ukva halacha kedivei kulan lahachmir. Who does the halacha follow like? All of the above. Lehachmir, meaning whichever results in a chumrah. So in other words, as Rashi points out, Mishnei Kritzos b'tzipor l'mem ha'enes. Meaning, so let's say now, so you could run your fingernail over it, and your fingernail gets caught on it, meaning obviously that's a very small shear, smaller than the bending it over so that it touches its root. But in other words, we're going to be machmir. Once you hit that point, she can no longer do miyun. Okay, right, and et cetera, et cetera. And the halacha is, on this regard, the halacha is, like all of them.
From
before, Rabbi Akiva, yes. Okay, good. It's a good stopping point. Tomorrow, we move to a lot of halacha lemaisa.